Welcome to Poetry Basket, KID's monthly reading of poems from near and far. We're celebrating salmon this month with poems from China, Japan, Native America, Siberia, and the United States.
We're going to open with a short poem by Sherman Alexie. It's a little vignette of the way it was. It's called Migration, 1902. The salmon swims so thick in this river that grandmother walks across the water on the bridge of their spines.
Some of our selections come from First Fish, First People, Salmon Tales of the North Pacific Rim, an anthology of literature from indigenous salmon peoples of Asia and North America.
According to a legend of the Macaw people from the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State, salmon were people before being transformed into fish. As part of the sacred cycle of life, salmon gladly chose to fulfill their duty as food for earth people.
To the Okanagan people from Washington State and British Columbia, salmon are the outward expression of God. The Ainu of northern Japan call salmon the fish of the gods.
Next, we have an abbreviated version of a Sanpoils legend in which Coyote creates the falls of Columbia River. It's called Coyote Becomes Chief of the Salmon. We're reading it in two voices.
In the beginning, Coyote had great power. He said to himself, "Why remain in seclusion when I have so much power?" He became restless and traveled down the Columbia River. At one place he stopped. The people had created a stone dam to keep the salmon behind it, so they would have a constant source of food to eat. But Coyote decided to take down the dam.
After Coyote broke up the stone dam, the freed salmon followed Coyote upstream. Whenever Coyote met people, he would have a salmon jump out of the water into his arms. Then he cooked it and asked the people to eat. At one place, he met a number of girls picking berries. They were very beautiful, and he decided he wanted one of them for his wife. He winked his eye, brought a salmon from the water, and feasted the girls. They were pleased, and their parents wanted him to take one of the maidens so that they would always have salmon to eat. He fell in love with one of the girls who had a fine voice and who was in the habit of using it to hear her words repeated by the echo.
When Coyote asked her to be his wife, she refused him with scorn. He became angry and started back down the river, taking the salmon with him. He stopped at the forks of the Similkameen. There he formed falls to keep the salmon from going up. Then he made more falls in the Okanagan, Kettle, and Columbia rivers, because in all these places the maidens refused to marry him.
Coyote's vengeful creation of the river falls didn't stop the salmon. It took the Europeans to do that. Our next poem is also by Sherman Alexie. It's called The Place Where Ghosts of Salmon Jump. The poet draws on the coyote legend we just read, and at the same time, he speaks to the destruction of wild salmon habitat. Sherman Alexie is of Spokane, Coeur d'Alene heritage.
The Place Where Ghosts of Salmon Jump. Coyote was alone and angry because he could not find love. Coyote was alone and angry because he demanded a wife from the Spokane, the Coeur d'Alene, the Palouse, and received only laughter. All those tribes camped on the edge of the Spokane River. So Coyote rose up with his powerful and senseless magic and smashed a paw across the water, which broke the river bottom in two, which created rain that lasted for 40 days and nights, which created Spokane Falls, that place where salmon traveled more suddenly than Coyote imagined, that place where salmon swam larger than any white man dreamed. Coyote, I know you broke the river because of love and pretended it was all done by your design. Coyote, you're a liar and I don't trust you. I never have. But I do trust all the stories the grandmothers told me. They said the falls were built because of your unrequited love. And I can understand that rage, Coyote. We can all understand. But look at the falls now and tell me what you see. Look at the falls now. If you can see beyond all the concrete the white man has built here, look at all this and tell me that concrete never equals love. Coyote, these white men sometimes forget to love their own mothers. So how could they love this river which gave birth to 1,000 lifetimes of salmon? How could they love these falls, which have fallen farther, which sit dry and quiet as a graveyard now? These falls are that place where ghosts of salmon jump, where ghosts of women mourn their children who will never find their way back home. Where I stand now and search for any kind of love. Where I sing softly, under my breath, alone and angry.
We have another poem by a Spokane tribal member, Illusions by Gloria Bird. Gloria Bird grew up on both the Spokane and Colville Indian reservations.
Illusions. There are no illusions to be had in the aftermath of flooding dams, like love. My vision of that silver leaping and flesh so red it appeared raw and bleeding was the consequence of mad medicine threatening every living thing on the planet, manifesting itself today in mental images of man-made concrete blocks, cold land, infertile. And so you are, lost to any saving graces, a vacant, pitiful soul who can neither tell the difference between love flooding like a salmon run on a good day, nor stilted indifference. There is no good to come from disrespect of the body of salmon, in which both water and light mean the same thing, and signify to those who need both that the story is far from being over.
Next is an excerpt from Salmon, a poem by contemporary American poet Joey Graham, born in New York City in 1950.
Salmon. I watched them once at dusk on television run in our motel room halfway through Nebraska, quick, glittering, past beauty, past the importance of beauty, archaic, not even hungry, not even endangered, driving deeper and deeper into less. They leapt up falls, ladders, and rock, tearing and leaping, a gold river and a blue river traveling in opposite directions. They would not stop, resolution of will and helplessness, as the eye is helpless when the image forms itself, upside down, backward, driving up into the mind, and the world unfastens itself from the deep ocean of the given. Justice, aspen leaves, mother attempting suicide, the white night-flying moth the ants dismantled bit by bit and carried in right through the crack in my wall. How helpless the still pool is, upstream, awaiting the gold blade of their hurry.
Next, an excerpt from a piece by Rick Bass called Years of Salmon, the Ghost Fish of Montana. Rick Bass is a writer and environmental activist in Montana. He was born in 1958.
There were salmon here once in Montana before a deep change occurred. There is still the alchemy of leaping, gleaming wild trout in Montana, but I believe there used to be salmon, ocean-going salmon. It's a little-known fact, yet one that anyone who's interested in exploring the history of the garden could discover. There are texts that predate ours. In certain forests, far up in the mountains, where the little creeks rush wild as they emerge from their dramatic headwaters, there are a few boulders that bear the etchings of the first humans who were here, perhaps back before the ice closed in and collapsed over the rivers and temporary dams. The petroglyphs show men in the river netting enormous fish, salmon, in the midst of the wild rivers where salmon were never known to exist, as if back then a secret passage to the sea existed. You have to know where to look to find those few boulders. There aren't many, and for the most part, lichens have swarmed over them, obscuring the art. Only the occasional wildfire that burns all the way to the water's edge, burning against all odds, through the wet cedar and aspen and birch along the river, scours the lichens briefly, making it look in that moment as if the rocks themselves are burning, though the window for viewing such smoking, gleaming, newly bald text is always very narrow. In 50 years, the text will be speckled with lichens again, the story hidden once more until the next burning. There were salmon in Montana, and not so long ago, before they were walled off. If you core the depths of giant cedar trees, you'll find marine nitrogen in them. The only way that marine nitrogen could have gotten here was in protein of salmon. The grizzly bears would have feasted on them back then and deposited the protein with its signature of the sea, there in the cedar forest. What happened? Who closed the gate on them, and why? Will they be back, and when? We do not want ghost salmon, but they are here, beneath our feet, and in the air. We must live with these ghosts, and, as ghosts do, they both haunt and sustain us. Those salmon vanish slowly, gracefully, over deep geological time, while all around us so many other species are disappearing now, with the seeming speed of a light being turned off.
Sandra Asawa is a Macaw native from Washington State. She is a writer and video producer. Here is her poem, The Macaw Indians.
The Macaw Indians. We sprang from salt water, a meeting of waves. Our men hollowed canoe from logs with the bone of whale, and together we rose as one, but were many, giving thanks to the sea with a song. We were born, startling the birds into flight, while the seagulls cried, circling the air, and following the strain of our paddles, moving us toward land. Now our men keep returning to the sea, filled with the rhythm of salmon, flashing a strange beauty through dark waters, as silver fins leap wildly over death, seeking the savage moment that saves the young. Our people will not die.
The Ainu are an ancient salmon people who live on the other side of the Pacific Ocean in northern Japan. Ainu legends are very similar to tribal legends of the Pacific Northwest. Here is Salmon Coming Home in Search of Sacred Bliss by Miko Chikapu, an Ainu native born in Hokkaido, Japan, 1948.
Salmon Coming Home in Search of Sacred Bliss. The salmon come riding home, home from long journeys through the great seas. How magnificent they flash! Look, home is just ahead, up there. Push on a little more. Weaving the waves together, the salmon dance in small, joyful jumps. Scales shine a bright silver. Riding the rhythm of the breaking waves, they twist their bodies and leap. But it does not always go as well as hoped. Twice and three times they jump, and again. Exhausted, some become swallowed by waves, where they crest on sandy shore. Weakly, twice, three times they try to jump again, and finally fall back where they lie. Awaiting them, the gulls and the crows, their ordeal faded from time beyond time. Yielding to the resistance of the river, the salmon come riding home to their birthplace, home, to their precious motherland. This is the river that sent them off to sea, this home from where they emerged, home river, resisting, not holding them back, whispers promises of life. The crashing waves of the river, never troubled with such matters, break on the shore again and again, unchanging. Only those who catch the rhythm of these waves will last to create life anew. Ride the waves and jump. Ah, a splendid leap! Yes, you will be fine now. You have made it through the hardest part. Now you need only swim home. Swift now, for home is just up there, just ahead. As salmon go home to their mother, the river goes home to its mother, the mountain. And in the home mountains reside the wisdom and teachings of the ancestors. Deep mountain dwelling, grandmothers, grandfathers, our ancestors, ancients swelling deep in the mountains, our progenitor gods, the guardian deities, the mountains, the breast of Mother Earth, the rivers that flow there, the mother's milk of Mother Earth. Take from the mountain-dwelling ancients full measure of nurture to nourish the salmon. The salmon, following the familiar scent and taste, ride the river home.
We have a poem by Ramona McCovey next, Wonderful Salmon. This poem was a first place entry in the 2008 Indian Education Student Art and Writing Contest. Ramona McCovey was in the 7th grade at Hoopa Elementary when she wrote this poem.
Wonderful Salmon. My salmon is beautiful. Her name is Wonderful. Her color is pink and green. She lives in the Klamath. She jumps high to touch the sky. With the water green, she stays nice, shiny, and clean. She is a nice, healthy fish. She runs up and down the river. She lives and spawns her babies. Her babies follow after her. Nepui is salmon in Yurok language. The Klamath is where Nepui rules the earth. She is shiny and beautiful. That is why I call her Wonderful.
We're going to shift now to the ocean home of salmon. Our next selection is The World Below the Brine by Walt Whitman, a great American poet born in Long Island, New York in 1819.
The World Below the Brine. The world below the brine, forests at the bottom of the sea, the branches and leaves, sea lettuce, vast lichens, strange flowers and seeds, the thick tangle openings and pink turf. Different colors, pale gray and green, purple, white and gold, the play of light through the water. Dumb swimmers there among the rocks, coral, gluten, grass, rushes, and the ailment of the swimmers. Sluggish existences, grazing there suspended, or slowly crawling close to the bottom. The sperm whale at the surface blowing air and spray, or disporting with his flukes. The leaden-eyed shark, the walrus, the turtle, the hairy sea leopard and the stingray. Passions there, wars, pursuits, tribes, sight in those ocean depths, breathing that thick breathing air as so many do. The change thence to the sight here, and to the subtle air breathed by beings like us who walk this sphere. The change onward from ours to that of beings who walk other spheres.
I have one more poem of the sea. This one's an excerpt from Whales Weep Not. It's by D.H. Lawrence, the British novelist and poet who was born in 1885. They say the sea is cold, but the sea contains the hottest blood of all, and the wildest, the most urgent. All the whales in the wider deeps are hot as they urge on and on and dive beneath the icebergs, the right whales, the sperm whales, the hammerheads, the killers. There they blow, hot, wild, white breath out of the sea. And they rock through the sensual, ageless ages on the depths of the seven seas. And through the salt, they reel with drunk delight. And in the tropics, they tremble with love and roll with massive, strong desire like gods. And bull whales gather their women and whale calves in a ring when danger threatens on the surface of the ceaseless flood, and range themselves like great fierce seraphim facing the threat, encircling their huddled monsters of love, and all this happiness in the sea and the salt, where God is also love, but without words. And Aphrodite is the wife of whales. So happy, happy she. And Venus, among the fishes, skips and is a she-dolphin. She is the gay, delighted porpoise, sporting with love in the sea. She is the female tiny fish, round and happy among the males, and dense with happy blood, dark rainbow bliss in the sea.
Next, we have an excerpt from a contemporary play about today's salmon. A whale is a major character in this play, which is called Two Stones, and which was written by Sharon Sadler, a resident of Sonoma County. Two Stones dramatizes what happened to the Pacific Northwest ecosystem when the miners came, and presents a mythological solution to the crisis. Here is a brief excerpt from Two Stones.
One dark day, Salmon Spirit was way down deep in her father ocean, between the continents, and came upon the spirit of the orca, the killer whale.
Greetings, Sister Salmon.
Greetings to you, Brother Orca.
What brings you here alone to the deep of our father ocean?
I am all alone and afraid. The waters of the earth are dying. My mother, my father are dying. The miner, Short Sights, just won't stop taking. He sees gold in everything. He just can't get enough. My mother river is dammed. My father ocean is poisoned and laden with too much soil, oil, plastic trash. I need him to be clean and healthy so I can see and smell and taste my way up river to lay my eggs again. What will it take for this guy, Short Sights, to get it? What will it take for him to remember?
You must go away completely and no longer offer your body to the world. And then, only then, maybe they will understand. Maybe they will remember. It could work. We nearly disappeared too, because we were not seen as equal players in the cast. In our case, only armies of activists and nonprofit organizations, nerdy college students going door to door, wild ones in boats of peace, rainbow warriors they call themselves, would not accept the taking of our kind as endless bounty for the human race any longer. This did seem to turn things around, some of this forgetfulness in some humans.
And so, on the advice of Orca, the great killer whale, Salmon went into the hole that appeared on Earth, the hole down which so many plants and animals were disappearing. Salmon went completely away from the waters of the Earth. Her whole family, her mother river, her father ocean, and her grandmother earth, the trees and forest, the humans, all their kin grieved and wept, and seriously decline without her gifts.
And then something happened.
What happened?
Short sights started to suffer from the effects of Grandmother Earth's fever. There was less and less bounty to take and take and take. He started to notice a great dimness around him, and besides, he wasn't making so much do-re-mi, if you know what I mean.
And so it was that Short Sights began to know, somewhere deep in himself, that there was a connection between all the dimness and Salmon being nowhere in sight.
We have a selection by Gary Snyder next, an excerpt from The Flowing, written about the Columbia River. The scene witnessed by the poet would be a familiar one on the Klamath or the Trinity. Gary Snyder is a Pulitzer Prize-winning West Coast poet born in 1930.
Riverbed from The Flowing. Down at the riverbed, singing a little tune, tin cans, fork sticks stuck up straight, half the stones of an old black campfire ring. The gypsy actors, rags and tatters, wives all dancers. And the children clowns come skipping down, hop on boulders, clever, free. Gravel scoop bed of the camo, a digger rig set up on truck bed with revolving screen to winnow out the stones. Brushy willow, twists of sand. At Celilo, all the Yakima, Wasco, Wishram, Warm Springs, catching salmon, talking, napping scattered through the rocks. Long sweep dip net held by a foam-drenched, braced, and leaning man on a rickety scaffold rigged to rocks. The whole Columbia River thunders beneath his one wet plank, the lift and plume of the water curling out and over, salmon arching in the standing spray.
I'm going to close with an Ainu poem, Song of the Wife of Okikurmi. It is a traditional song to be chanted by an elder. And I saw before me the Saru River, flowing clear and sparkling. In the fields by the banks, deer running in herds. A herd of large deer, a herd of small deer. So beautifully flowed the river, with salmon of small size and salmon of great size, thrashing their way upstream. The sun scorched the backs of fish at the surface. Pebbles scraped the bellies of fish on the riverbed. Fishermen tangled hooks, vying to spear the salmon.
And that's it for Poetry Basket. Our readers today were Samuel Claiborne, Sandra Lupine, Florine McCovey, Cynthia Potten, Joseph Orozco, and Jay Rinuzzulli. Poetry Basket was produced by Cynthia Potten and engineered by Joseph Orozco. Thank you for listening.